So, a little summary. Not a long one, because I've been doing long ones and it takes a long time to do the long summary. Tattvasandarbha is part of a masterpiece, brilliant exposition on Srimad Bhagavatam by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami being one of the foremost acharyas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the next generation following Lord Chaitanya was led by Rupa and Sakli, instructed. Jiva Goswami, their nephew, what they had heard and understood and realized from directly hearing from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In addition, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, from the time that he was just a small boy, Gopal Bhatta, heard directly from Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's teachings, every day for hours, for 4 months of the rainy season, where Lord Chaitanya stayed in their home. So he was well acquainted with Lord Chaitanya's teachings, and because he was the son of the chief priest of Sri Rangam, he had access to scripture. He knew the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, so he studied in a way that exceptionally spiritually qualified study. He kept very careful notes, katachas, according to the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, and details and details and details, and handed all of that to Jiva Goswami, publishable form as an exposition by topic, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that its understandings. So all of that was, and so much more, was the foundation for Jiva Goswami writing the Sandarbhas. And the first of the six has been translated by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. I met deceased, but I knew him in a personal way for years and years and years. And he spent 15 years preparing this publication. An awesome personality. Not just because he spent so much time. So many nice things to say about Gopi. In this first of the six, it's establishing the foundation for the other five. There's primarily a Pramana Khanda and Prameya Khanda. Those terms mean the means of valid knowledge, or the source of valid knowledge, pramana. Because in the Mangalacharana, Jiva Goswami declared, I want to talk about Krishna. But before speaking about Krishna, one should identify what's the primary means of knowing that subject, Krishna. And he goes through this extensive exercise, reaching the conclusion that Srimad Bhagavatam is the best for knowing about anything, but certainly knowing about transcendence. What's beyond the senses to see or hear, and the reasoning faculties to understand, transcendental subject matter must be heard in a descending fashion from aparusheya, or an infallible source, the Supreme Lord, Narayana, is the source of the Vedas. And Krishna spoke Srimad Bhagavatam directly to Lord Brahma. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kave. So, Bhagavatam is the best source. And then the Pramaya section is, what's that knowledge that's within the Pramana? particularly the knowledge about Krishna, Krishna Tattva, therefore Tattva Sandarbha. So as you see, we discussed 29 through 33, for those of you that are newly with us. The Prameya Kanda starts with 29. The Pramana ends with 26. There's two verses where Jiva Goswami describes his methodology in presenting all of the Sandarbhas and the sources that he's going to draw from. Like any academic person that's been in academia knows, you have to do that when you write something exhaustive and comprehensive. What are the sources and how you plan to use them? So he does that. Highly scholarly. And then Prameya. What's in that Bhagavatam? What is its subject matter? What's its meaning? What's its conveying to us? So 29 through 33 covers Shukadeva Goswami's realization, Vyasadeva's realization, what's in their heart, because what's in their heart is what comes out. Just like any one of us, what's in the heart is what comes out. What's inside comes outside. So I'm not going to review the parts, but essentially they were completely free from any material contamination and completely attracted to Krishna alone. Not attracted. Sukadev started with not only attracted to Brahman, fully realized. Multiple verses describe that. Fully realized. Even before he was born. And he received promise from Krishna, from Vaivarta Purana, indicates, Krishna came to the place where Shukadeva was still in the womb of his mother, and Krishna promised Shukadeva, I give you my word, you'll be free from Maya. Please come out. So he came out, protected from Maya. So not attracted to Maya, which tells us a lot about Mayavad doctrine, that says Brahman, where Maya is imposed or superimposed upon Brahman, that's what Krishna is. Shukadeva is not interested in Maya. He's interested in transcendence. So, those two, the Shukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva's realizations, their hearts, then become the subject matter for these verses, which we just finished. Aren't you lucky you're just like getting a summary and you don't even have to go through all that hours and hours and hours of puzzling discussion, where this section is taking those elements and then holding them up against what Vyasadeva saw and realized, against what Shukadeva, what Shankaracharya said. So here's Vyasa's realizations and here's Shankaracharya's statements. Now, what's significant is Shankaracharya accepts the authority of Vyas, because he accepted the Vedas and Vyas is the authority of the Vedas. So anything that Shankaracharya has to say, or anybody that's a follower of the Vedas says, has to be in accord with Vyas. And the realization of Vyas is the basis of the ripened fruit of all the Vedic knowledge in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So you hold it up against that. You know, that's the light, and you hold an object up to the light so you can see, is it transparent or opaque? Or you can't even see anything. So we spend a lot of time doing that, all these verses. And now we're ready for the next section, which starts with verse 44 and goes to 49, and then ends this broad section of to understand that the exercise is, what's the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam? It's the pramana, the means of or source of valid knowledge about Krishna. What does it say? What does it say about Krishna? What's Krishna Tattva? From the realization of Vyasa and Shukadeva. That's the exercise. So the next section is going to go into beyond Sambandha, because we only covered the realizations of Vyasa cover 6 verses. And we've spent a lot of hours just discussing 2 of those 6 verses. 1.7.4, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text Number 4, Text Number 5. That's Sambandha. Okay, this is review. Those of you who have been with us are probably going to get tired of hearing this. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Going back, just review. When Lord Chaitanya was going to Vrindavan from Puri, he passed through Varanasi. He stayed at the house of Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar, and because they're his devotees, and he associated with them. And then he went off to Vrindavan, came back, and Lord Chaitanya stayed again at their home. And while staying at their home, he was engaging in kirtan. And he wasn't going to the sannyasi programs where they would chant Om and speculate on Vedanta Sutra. He wasn't interested. So they were criticizing him. Have any of you ever been criticized?
No.
Well, you're in good company because Lord Chaitanya was also criticized. He was criticized for chanting instead of being a stoic sannyasi and chanting Om and studying Vedanta Sutra for hours, like, you know, 10 hours a day, every day, for the rest of his life. He wasn't doing that. So they were criticizing him. And his dear associates, it hurt them to hear this criticism. So they finally disclosed their heart to him and said, we know you don't mind this, but we do. It hurts. Can you do something? So the something that he did, Lord Chaitanya did, was he converted all the Mayavad sannyasis to become chanters. That's what he did. But he did it in a very interesting way. He accepted an invitation for lunch that happened to have 1,000 sannyasis also attending. And there's lots of things, but they asked him, why are you carrying on with ordinary people, worldly people, singing and dancing, partying? Sannyasis don't do this. Why are you doing this with bahukas? You're a fanatic and they're fanatics, and you're not, get sober, will you? You're a sannyasi. Don't do these things. Why are you doing these things? We understand you're a very learned person. You have this reputation. Nimai Pandit. Most scholarly person, defeated Digvijay Pandit, Keshava Kashmiri, powerful. You're just a teenager and you defeated. You're brilliant. Why are you doing this? And Lord Chaitanya said, my spiritual master told me I'm a fool, that I'm not qualified to just study Vedanta Sutra. He said, you should just chant Hare Krishna. And then something happened when I started chanting Hare Krishna, this and that. And so I went and asked him, am I doing something wrong? My hairs are standing on end and tears are coming from my eyes and rolling on the ground. And I must be doing something wrong. And my spiritual master said, oh, this is very good. And quoted Srimad Bhagavatam saying, this is a symptom of the highest stages of love of God. So carry on. And then they ask questions about, well, what about the Vedanta Sutra? He said, well, I understand Vedanta Sutra. Oh, you understand Vedanta Sutra. Can you explain it to us as you understand it from the singing and dancing perspective? And so he did, and he explained it according to Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, because that's how it's made up. Because that's how the Vedas are made up. And that's how Srimad Bhagavatam is made up, and that's how the Sandarbhas are made up, and that's the realization of Vyas and Shukadeva are made up of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. That's the next section. So we just did the Sambandha section. And coming attractions, as soon as I stop doing this review, is Abhideya Prayojana. And how is that embedded within the realization of Vyas and Shukadeva? And how do the two match? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Because we already did the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana for Shukadeva, and they match. So part of the rigorous part that you that weren't with us missed was defeating Mayavad philosophy. We got a little panorama, mini panorama of Mayavad philosophy. We had everyone take a little medicine before their ears heard that poison coming in. But the elements of Mayavad philosophy, which says things that are just nonsensical, without reviewing all of that. Now there were, for the final part of the review, there were two questions that Parinirupa asked that I said I would do a little research on, and I did. So I'd like to share that research with you. And one other thing is a correction of something that I said in the late morning session. So the correction part is, in Shankaracharya's teachings, there are key phrases from the Upanishads, particularly two, but others, Tattvamasi and Aham Brahmasmi, that he called Mahavakyas, principal utterances. So the correction is, that I said is, there's Mahavakyas in the Bhagavatam. There are, but I was pointing to instead the Paribhas Sutra. So the correction is, this Nectar of Instruction and Srimad Bhagavatam have their Paribhas Sutra. Ete Changsakala Pungsang Krishnas Tu Bhagavan Swayam, which takes up a huge part of a later Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha, that Krishna is the source of everything from whom all expansions of Krishna come. And Nectar of Instruction has its key verse that governs all the other verses. The subject matter of the whole of Nectar Devotion is ruled by that one verse. So just a terminology correction. Paribhas Sutra is not the same as Mahavakya. In fact, the research on Mahavakya turns out to be, like in the glossary of Vedabase, it's Pranava or Omkar. The Mayavadis like chanting Om. And that is another Mahavakya. So for Shankara, Aham Brahmasmi is in the same category. Or Tat Tvam Asi. So we discussed this a lot, and we're going to discuss it some more. Jiva Goswami is going to present these materials. So that was the correction part of from the earlier session. Now, in text 42, looking at Parinirupa, there's this discussion in text 42 about a statement from Vedanta Sutra that indicates this terminology of pratibimba. For those of you that weren't with us, what's that? Pratibimba and parichade. So the theory of reflection and the theory of, like, the pot covering the sky. So I want to read Paramarupa, the translation of the BBT before it became published like this. So it's Gopi Pranadanda's work, but then it underwent editing. So this is from a particular a digital version. Just listen. Certain scriptural passages that appear to favor such doctrines as parichade, secondary sense. That is, as expressing some sort of similarity between the Supreme's relation to the manifest world and the ordinary processes of division and reflection. So that the specific Vedanta Sutra references are 3.2.19 and 3.2.20. This translation is very interesting. Covers the land underneath and thus delimits it from the rest of the earth. But Brahman cannot be delimited in this way to become a jiva. So there's the appropriate use of that pratibimba, and there's an inappropriate use right in Vedanta Sutra. And then the very next sutra says, is appropriate not in its primary sense, but in its secondary sense, that of water delimiting a larger and smaller areas of land. This interpretation fulfills the purpose of the scriptural passages, and thus it is appropriate to compare Brahman to land. Now, the commentary is very different than what's published in this book that many of you purchased while you were here. And I'll just summarize it simply. There's a rule in Sanskrit that there's, for all words, there's primary and secondary meanings. It's going to touch on this in the presentation coming up. Primary meanings are to be accepted unless it just doesn't work. It's inappropriate. So an example that's given of something that's inappropriate is right from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 4. Arjuna is called by Krishna tiger among men. So it's not to say the direct meaning is that Arjuna has fangs and claws and rips creatures apart with his fangs and claws and devours them like tigers do. So the direct meaning is inappropriate. And there's the ferocious heroism of Arjuna, O tiger amongst men. That's an example of where a secondary meaning is to be taken. What Vedanta Sutra is saying and what Jiva Goswami is putting in text 42 is where there are passages that seem to say that Brahman becomes either divided or reflected, it says Brahman can't be either divided or reflected. And therefore, secondary meaning must be taken. And this is explaining how it is to be taken. As we discussed this morning. For example, Krishna has the capacity to expand himself unlimitedly. He can expand into Vishnu Tattva forms. He can expand himself into Tushta Shakti. He can expand himself in so many ways. Although he's the complete whole, he can expand himself into parts of the complete whole. And that's this delimiting idea that's appropriate for Brahman in this sense, but not in the sense that the Mayavadis take it. Don't understand what I just said? No problem. We're going to circulate this to all the people who register. And if you didn't register, please register. Then you can get this more complete explanation. It's a fine point, but it's an important point because, you know, we don't have any Shankara advocates in the room here. But if there was, they would say, well, wait a minute. There's Vedic statements that speak about you're dismissing, delimiting, and reflection, but that's not right. It's right in the Vedas. Well, you're not likely to meet somebody that knows all that anyways, because scholarship today is kind of out to lunch. But if you did meet somebody, or even if you, so that you're, in your heart, you're convinced that we're not just sentimentalists, there's a very clear Vedanta Sutra-based, Srimad-Bhagavatam-based, Acharya-confirmed understanding of how these terms are to be taken and how they're not to be taken. We're on solid ground. The performers of bhakti are not meant to be sentimentalists. They're meant to be clear in the object that they're taking shelter of and worshiping Krishna. Okay, that was one of the questions that I said I would research. And then the other one has to do with text 30, because he wasn't with us at the beginning, and he listened to text 30 recording. And there's this realization of Vyas, 174, bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate mathe apashat, he saw Purusham Purnam. Purusham Purnam means the Purusha, the Supreme Person, in his fullness. Purnam. And this, in this case, Purusham Purnam means he saw Krishna, and has multiple verifications of that, some of which you're going to hear again later, including in 177, is specific. Krishne Paramapurushe, that one. So he saw Krishna in his fullness, which means he saw Goloka Vrindavan, the river Jamuis and the Gopis and Radharani and the spiritual world, because Krishna is not alone. Krishna is with his whole abode. Wherever Krishna goes, his abode comes with him. He saw all that. Purusham Purnam. And to verify that, make that statement, Jiva Goswami makes some sankams. There's two verses in Canto 2, Chapter 3. And verses 9 and 10, those are that section where Shukadeva Goswami says that those that want good health, they worship the sun. Those that want wealth, they worship Lakshmi. Those that want this, they worship this one. Those that want that, they worship that one. And then those who desire, in case you want sense gratification, but one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Person, Purusham Purnam. So, Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on that verse, says, that's the Supersoul. Because the Supersoul has the capacity to fulfill desires and also has the capacity to free one from desires or the destruction of desires, to give or to remove even the desire, for material enjoyment. That's a super soul function. That's from Vishwanath's commentary, Paramarupa. That's from Vishwanath's commentary directly. And then the immediate next verse is a very famous verse amongst Vaishnavas. Akama sarvakama va mokshakama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham. Then there's different versions of the Bhagavatam. Akam purvam. In either case, it means the same. And Sridhar Swami says, I did a little research, that it refers to the original feature of Krishna, because this, in this group of three, there's mention of those that wish to go beyond the stage of liberation. And that means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Because that's beyond the Paramatma feature, it's the spiritual realm. And therefore, in this case, Purusham Purnam means the Bhagavan feature of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So that was the little bit of research that I said I would do. He just wanted some clarification. Okay, so now, texts 44, 5, and 6 we're going to be covering. Here's how it starts. The Abhideya and Prayojana, understood on the basis of Vyasa's realization. Just a little refresher. In text 29, we heard the Abhideya and Prayojana according to Shukadeva's realization. Remember? Because his heart was swa sukha nibrita chetasa. His chetasa, his heart, or his consciousness, was filled with his own spiritual happiness, swa sukha. He was in bliss of Brahman realization with nothing else going on. No hint of attraction for anything other than his own happiness. He was Atmarama. He was fully satisfied within. He didn't need something outside of himself for happiness. Anything. And then he became attracted to Krishna, which means Krishna is not material. And it means the happiness of being with Krishna is greater than the happiness of Brahman. So that was Shukadeva's heart. And therefore the goal, the prayojana, was love for Krishna. And the means to get there was how he got there. He heard from Vyas, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing the glories of Krishna, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, that describes the Abhideya. That's Shukadeva. Now here it's the Abhideya and Prayojana understood from Vyas. And he's going to do this exercise of seeing, do they match? And they match. Naturally they match, because what Shukadeva received was from what Vyasadeva gave him. So they match. But he's going to analyze it, because that's what Jiva Goswami does. So that bhakti is the Abhideya is logically inferred. Now, Jiva Goswami takes the position at the very, very beginning of his methodology section, is that sometimes things aren't directly stated. They're inferred. One very strong example, I'm sure you remember, those of you that were with us, when he saw Purusham Purnam, he saw Radharani. And the logical inference is, when you see the full moon, you also see the effulgence around the full moon. So if you say to somebody, The other evening, I saw the beautiful full moon. You don't say, oh, and I also saw the effulgence around the full moon. You don't say that. But it's inferred you saw the effulgence because you saw the full moon. You must have seen the effulgence around the full moon. So there are some statements Jiva Goswami reasonably asserts. There's some inferred We're just discussing two verses so far. 174 and 175. So from those two verses, we can infer that Vyasa's realization logically presents that bhakti is that abhideya, or the means of realizing the goal. So here's how he does it. The logic, very simple. God is the foundation of Maya that we heard in Bewildered by Maya. That's text 5. Proves that God and the Jiva are distinct. Now the inference is really simple. Prabhupada said like this, I really like it. Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great, we are very small, therefore we should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. How great God is, that they do not know. It is then to understand the glories of Krishna. And we're very small. Therefore, inferred, if you're honest, if you're dishonest, you do something else. But if you're honest, you serve Krishna. Yeah? It's just like Krishna says, it with the first of the Chaturshloki verses in Bhagavad Gita, 10:8. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Matak sarvam pravartate iti matva means thus knowing vajante mam. It's inferred. You just, what do you do when you understand Krishna is the source of everything? Vajante mam. Engage in his devotional service. So what's in text 4 and 5 infers devotional service. Living entity is small. Krishna is great. And then, you know, coming attractions is in text 7, it directly says it. Narto Parshamam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madhoksa Jay. We'll get there very, very soon. Now, this is in the translation, Bhagavad Gita 7:14. But it's not in the Sanskrit of the verse. Somehow, it made it into the book. But it's appropriate. It's appropriate for the commentary because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says 7:14, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. Who knows the verse? Sanskrit? What's the verse? Everyone likes it when a child says something. An adult says it, it doesn't carry the same gravity. But a young, smiling girl, when she says it, it's very nice. Your brother probably knows the verse too. So, but those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. So, in case of Bhagavad Gita, it's not inferred, it's explicit. Now, so devotional service is the abhideya. This is somehow not working properly. In 176, that's that anarto pashamam sakshat bhakti yoga madhokshaje. The way of getting rid of anartas is by the process of devotional service. Bhakti yoga madhokshaje. Devotional service to Adhoksaja, the personality of Godhead. And this is still text 44. We're just going to cover three verses. Text 44. Somebody asked in the session earlier today, is there somewhere in the Tattvasandarbha that the fall of the jiva is discussed? And I said, not to my knowledge. Well, those of you that have your book, you can look. I'm not going to read it because it'll just really take the discussion in the wrong direction. But Gopi Pranadana reiterates what Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, which is, we have to acknowledge, you know, more or less, you have to acknowledge at some point we chose to be separate from Krishna from 1.7.5 Yayasa Mohito Jiva Atmanam Trigunatmakam Paropi. Although transcendental, the living entity gets bewildered. So how did that get bewildered situation happen? Well, we turned our attention away from Krishna. Actually, there is another place where Jiva Goswami does discuss this topic, and it's at the very beginning of Bhakti Sandarbha. It's really nice. I mean, I'm a Jiva Goswami fan, so whatever he does, I like. But he asks the question, the beginning of Bhakti Sandarbha is asking the question, how does material life begin? Because if you understand that, you know, you can understand how to get out of material life. Like, you know, how do we enter the temple room? Well, we came through the door. So when it's exit time, you go through the door because that's how you got in here. Very logical. So he asked the question, how did material life begin? And his, you know, some people say this, that, and the other thing, which he refutes and then says, Bahir Mukha Jeev. There's different Sanskrit phrases that say the same thing, but we turned our attention away from Krishna. Which Jiva Goswami has quoted another verse from the Bhagavatam that says the same thing. You remember, because I've quoted it several times. Bhayam Dityam Abhinivesha Taksyat Viparyayo. So, when the living entity turns their attention away from Krishna, then they pay attention to something else. Dityam Abhinivesha Taksyat is what that means. Dityam, something other than Krishna, Abhinivesha. They develop affinity for something, money, or sense gratification, or whatever it is. These days, it's these little digital computer games. It's amazing how much people can spend time doing those brainless, brain-numbing things. Anyway, I'm shocked when I travel and see, you know, people doing that. Business people, they're addicted. They can't stop. For hours. You know, you gotta be attached to something. So if you're not attached to Krishna, you're going to be attached to something other than Krishna. Abhinivesha taksyat. Tutiyam abhinivesha taksyat. Bhayam. So we're going to hear in one of these verses of Vyasa's realization of how fear can be driven away. No more fear. Not by bluff, but by transcendence. By prema. Distraction is taken and fear is gone. So, here's how Gopi ends this little, it's a short commentary. You are an eternal servant of the personality of Godhead. He is your eternal master and well-wisher. You'll be peaceful and happy again when you revive your relationship with Him. That's abideya, according to the realization of Vyas. Now, text 45. Love of God is the prayojan, or the result of that engagement of devotional service. And of course, devotional service starts with sadhana, doesn't start with prema. But here's his logic from text 6. Because the personality of Godhead gives spiritual instructions for everyone's benefit, because he removes everyone's happiness, unhappiness, because as the sun is to its rays, he is the supreme self of all jivas, and because he possesses all super excellent qualities, he is supremely deserving of love. This is the methodology that in text 27-28, Jiva Goswami said he's going to follow. He follows the very same methodology as Vedanta Sutra. It's Anukarana. He makes it just a statement. And then following the statement comes, his methodology is, a verse or verses from the Bhagavatam that support that statement. And then the third step is things that Sridhar Swami or Ramanujacharya say. That's his methodology. So here's making a statement. And by this understanding, these are the greatnesses of Krishna. And because he is all attractive in this way, loving him is natural. So now here's the commentary. There are four reasons given in this verse why the Supreme Personality of God is the most deserving object of our love, because loving propensity is there with everyone, and the Supreme Personality is the most lovable. Why? First, he's always thinking of everyone's welfare. Now, we may have our friends or family or people that are dear to us, and we care a lot about them. But who's that person who factually is always thinking of every living entity's welfare in all species of life, in all circumstances, and everything? Suradam Sarvadehinam, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 29. He's the well-wishing friend of every living entity. And how does he demonstrate that? Well, he teaches the conditioned souls in various ways how to better themselves. He comes himself to give direct instruction, as he did when he taught Arjuna. Or as Vedavyas, literary incarnation, he came himself and compiled all the Vedic literature. He sends his devotees to teach that message as his goodwill ambassadors. Even on the material level, the Supreme Lord takes care of all living beings by impartially supplying them with such essentials as light, air, water, and food. Even atheists and agnostics are provided for. And then what to speak of higher things? Such higher things as this very, very wonderful, often quoted verse by Uddhava, Canto 3, Chapter 2, where Vidura has come to see him and he wants to hear something about Krishna. And Vidura, Uddhava says, who can be a better master than Krishna? Aho Bhakti. It starts like that. The Putana, who was the sister of Bakasura, they were brother and sister. When Putana came to kill Krishna, Krishna overlooked the fact that she came to kill Krishna, and he just looked at the fact that she wanted to be his mother. So he gave her liberation in the spiritual world as an assistant of Mother DeSoto, acting in the role of mother. In his commentary, Prabhupada writes on that verse, the nature of envy is you look for some fault even if there isn't one. And the nature of a cultured person, a highly refined and cultured person, is although there may be many faults, you look to see the good quality and you honor that good quality. That's a cultured and elevated person. So Krishna is more than such a person. He gave Putana, who came to kill him, the position of an assistant of Mother DeSoto in the spiritual world. So Krishna is very kind. He's the most deserving object of our love. Then the next, he relieves the miseries of the conditioned souls by helping to liberate them from illusion, not only by giving instruction, but other ways. To take advantage of this help, the jivas have to surrender to him. Well, he makes a condition. But Lord Chaitanya didn't make any condition. Therefore, he's the most merciful of all forms of the Lord. Number three, he is the ultimate sarup or self of all beings. He's the soul of souls. Well, you know, like within the body of everything that's alive, there's a soul. And within the heart of that soul is the super soul. One of my godbrothers asked Srila Prabhupada a question twice because he thought Prabhupada didn't understand his question. He said, it is said that the living entity is 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. And it is said that super soul is about the size of a thumb or 6 inches. So how does something 6 inches fit inside the heart of something that's 1/10,000th the tip of a hair? What is the problem? And he just repeated, the soul is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. And within the heart of the soul, there's a super soul who's 6 inches the size of the thumb. What's the problem? Because he's transcendentally situated. You know, it's like when, because it's in that machine part, the heart. No, it's in the region of the heart. And then you put in another machine part, it's still in the same region. Similarly, transcendentally situated, super soul is within the heart of the tiny jiva. He's within the heart of the heart. He's the self of the self. That's what's being said here. He's the ultimate sarup, or self. The sun's rays always depend on the sun. And the sun rays are glorious only in relation to the sun, in the same way the jivas perpetually depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and become glorious only when they reawaken their true relationship with him through bhakti yoga. And this is something similar to the Bhagavad Gita message, but, you know, having faith or the tendency to worship someone is there because that's intrinsic to the soul to worship God. But if you don't worship God, then you worship according to the modes of nature. If you're in the mode of goodness, you worship the demigods. If you're in the mode of passion, you worship Donald Trump. A man. Or, you know, a rock star or a movie star or an athlete hero and people rah-rah. That's the mode of passion. Or the mode of ignorance, ghosts and spirits. The tendency to worship is there intrinsic to the soul, and the most worthy is the object of Krishna. And finally, he's the all-attractive person. He's such a wonderful person. He has qualities that are so wonderful. We're attracted by people that we have relationships with that we appreciate. Some nice qualities. They're humble, or they're honest, or they're caring, or they're very service-minded, or whatever it is. They can sing nicely, they cook nicely, or whatever qualities. But Krishna is the repository of all nice qualities. He is the all-attractive Supreme Person. And of all the Supreme Lord's direct manifestations, his original two-headed form as a cowherd boy is the most beautiful and attractive. So, love of God, to say this is what Lord Chaitanya taught. What's in Vyasa's realization and Shukadeva's realization makes up the Bhagavatam, and Lord Chaitanya's teachings are the same as the Bhagavatam. It's a theme that weaves itself again and again for the overall objective of saying, 1, 2, 3, this is a strategy of Jiva Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest teaching. The teaching of Lord Chaitanya, highest teaching. Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundara Ki Jai. Okay, we're doing all right with time. Purushartas means, Prabhupada named one of his disciples Purushartha. Very nice devotee. He was temple president in the Tuaco temple for some years ago. Then he moved to Florida, like so many other people. So Purushartha is this Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, for the purpose of increasing piety so that then there's artha, prosperity, for the purpose of kama or sense gratification and ultimate liberation. So these four are said to be elements of what the Vedas describe, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, but there's the fifth goal. What's beyond moksha is Krishna prema, which is exactly what happened with Shukadev. He was already liberated. And then he went beyond liberation to Krishna prema. That's what the Bhagavatam teaches. That's what Lord Chaitanya taught. And that's the realization of Vyas as well. So Krishna prema, or love of God, is the fifth and ultimate goal. Panchama Purushartha, prema pumarto mahan. We've heard these phrases again and again. Prabhupada would speak them. The Lord Chaitanya gave this teaching. One more. 46. So we've done 44, 45. And 46, we're getting another one of the realizations of Vyas. We've covered 4 and 5. Here's number 6. So we can recite the verse together. Anartho pashamam sakshad bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidvangs chakre satvata samhitam. The translation. The material miseries of the living entity. That's this anartha. Material can be directly mitigated. Upashamam, mitigated. By the linking process of bhakti yoga, devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled the Vedic literature, which is in relation to this analysis of this verse, and we're done. So he starts with removal of anartas, or anarto, pashamam sakshat. And the indication is, this is describing the bhakti sadhana stage of bhakti. The sadhana stage of bhakti is anartha nivritti. Following bhajana kriya is anartha nivritti, what Vyasa's realization was. Vyas envisioned the process of self-realization, abhideya, and presented the Shruti text for the pure Vaishnavas. What's that? Srimad Bhagavatam. Shruti text means directly spoken by the Lord. So Vyasadeva is the incarnation of the Lord. And he, through Shukadeva, then spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. So he's calling it the Shruti text for pure Vaishnavas. His purpose was to engage people in that very same method, the process of bhakti yoga, which is what happened with Shukadeva and it's happening with us right now. So in this text, sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice, and one of the explanations he gives is, someone that's on the prema stage, they don't need instructions. Someone that's not on the prema stage, they need instructions. So Vyas gave instructions for those that need it, the sadhana candidates. So it's describing sadhana bhakti. It's inferred, it's logical. And then he goes on, as he did previously, he's doing it again, that from the sadhana stage, in the mature stage, prema bhakti becomes manifest. Nonetheless, sadhana bhakti is the cause for gaining the Lord's mercy and is the womb from which the fruit of pure love for him is born. Thus, bhakti, independent of any material contamination. Following his methodology, he's making a declaration, simple one. And then he gives scriptural references from the Bhagavatam to support his declaration. So those scriptural references behind my computer. This is from Uddhava Gita. Krishna's instructing Uddhava in the science of devotional service. And from chapter 20. There's a bookmark, chapter 20. Text number 32. And 33. Jiva Goswami cites them. I'll just read the translation. Everything that can be achieved by fruitive activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. If somehow or other my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation, or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benedictions. You know, it's the root of the tree. You just water the root and everything gets nourished by watering the root of the tree. And that root is the process of bhakti. So he's using this as scriptural to confirm his statement. Or, alternatively, sadhana bhakti directly cures, without delay, the general contamination of material suffering, and only pure love of God, the fruit of such practice, cures one's more basic bewilderment and misidentification. So, sadhana gets you started, but if you want to become completely free from the contamination of bodily identification and its concomitant misery, you have to keep going besides just, you know, chant your rounds. You have to actively cultivate bhakti up to the mature stage. Jiva Goswami says that the purifying effect of sadhana is contact with the Lord himself. Sadhana brings you in contact with Krishna through his name and through various forms of service. That brings the purification of the contamination that we are too familiar with. Although sadhana bhakti is only the preliminary stage of devotional service, it at once pleases the personality of Godhead, who notices that a forgetful soul is now awakening and trying to hear about him. He personally helps purify that devotee from within. Even at the beginning stage, we're going to hear more about this. It's very important. Isn't it very nice? Krishna is very kind. Even you're just, you know, a knucklehead beginner. You try. Krishna sees it and Krishna helps. Prabhupada said you take one step toward Krishna, he'll take 100 steps towards you. It's his nature. Sadhana bhakti is therefore described as anarto pashamam sakshat, or the direct means of counteracting material disqualifications. So now, implied, there's two things. Sadhana bhakti doesn't depend on other things. It's an independent process. It doesn't depend upon gyan, doesn't depend on karma. Sound familiar? It's the definition of devotional service from Rupa Goswami. Anyabhilasha trishunyam jnana karma jnavratam. Bhakti stands alone. It isn't dependent upon your knowledge capacity. To understand all of this, this like very elevated subject matter, you don't have to be scholarly. Really? It sounds pretty scholarly to me. You know, but you won't understand it by scholarship. There's lots of scholars that can't understand Jiva Goswami. A little story. I took a course in Tattva Sandarbha from Gopi Pranadana at the VIAG. Since he didn't have it published, he used another translation by Stuart Elkman. Stuart Elkman was his PhD thesis to do a translation of Tattva Sandarbha. And it was a good translation, except he had an attitude problem in Baladev Vidyabhusan and his commentary. And he was like, you know, he was scholarly about it. He separated that from the translation of Tattva Sandarbha and then started criticizing Baladev. And, I heard this from Gopi, when he finished his PhD, he went to Sringeri Math and became a sannyasi, Mayavad sannyasi. So he was scholarly enough to pass his message and became a Mayavadi. So scholarship isn't sufficient. We use our intelligence to understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and whatever it is that we hear, Bhagavad Gita and everything that we hear. We use our intellect, but that's not sufficient. In fact, it can just make you hard-hearted and proud instead of soft-hearted and realized and humble. I said this at the beginning. Try to hear this. You use your faculty of discernment, of intellect, and you try to hold the concepts within your mind, and it makes it pretty mind-expanding concepts, but you just stay with it. But that's not going to be the way, that's not the way it's going to help you grow spiritually. You just have more information in your information basket, now you know a lot. That's not going to help you. It needs to touch the heart and appreciate the awesome nature of Krishna and the awesome nature of Krishna's devotees. And how much love for Krishna they have and how much they understand the greatness of Krishna that inspires their love for him. So this last part is after the sadhana stage that's independent of jnana and karma, it goes beyond the stage of removing anarthas, and it leads to the higher stages of prema, which has the power to take away all traces of disqualification. And that's the gift that Lord Chaitanya came to give. A medium for that, in addition to the chanting of the holy name, is hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis, trying to understand its message, letting the heart become cleansed and purified as a result and attracted to Krishna, like Shukadeva Goswami became. Attracted to Krishna without a tinge of anything else. That's our target. That's our goal. Black Friday instead of somewhere else. Doing what a lot of other people are doing. Okay, we're almost done with this section. We just covered 44, 45, 46. We just have 47, 48, 49. We're done with this section. Ready for the next section. Yeah. Here comes the microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, why did Krishna want Lord Shiva to preach Mayavadi philosophy instead of...
Because that question was asked earlier, and... The reason is, part of Krishna's plan is that there is four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, and Kali. And in Kali Yuga, there are certain features of Kali Yuga to be Kali Yuga. He instructed, it's two parts. He instructed Lord Shiva to come as Shankaracharya and teach this Mayavad doctrine to help accelerate Kali Yuga. But then, because then people would become bewildered by this misleading philosophy, will get bewildered. Even people that are sincere in their spirituality may get bewildered. Accelerates real spirituality, elevates, and it helps make this golden age. So that's what Lord Chaitanya did directly. But another thing is, Lord Shiva then gave a place way over there for people that don't want something genuine, so they can be over there and have their party over there, and the pure Vaishnavas can be over here. It's something like what Maya does. Maya bewilders the jiva with allurements of enjoyment and sense gratification when Krishna really wants the living entities to come to him. Remember that discussion? Do you remember that discussion?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Or to do it. And on the other hand, Krishna wants the living entities to come to him. So it seems like a contradiction. But there's a purpose. Within the action of Maya, there's a certain kind of misery. And so I wanted enjoyment, instead I got misery. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. But then there's devotees that canvass and explain this. There is an alternative. I don't know if you have met any kind of... Well, we all have. We had this discussion. The whole world, not only the Western world, the whole world is filled with impersonalism. So the antidote to that is personalism. So Krishna also does that. But he gives this Kali Yuga option for people that don't want Krishna. So he directs them to philosophized Brahman through Shankaracharya or through Lord Shiva doing this. It's a service. It's a Kali Yuga service. Now, Lord Shiva also has his own Vaishnav Sampradaya. And for those that are qualified, he gives that. Like the Prachetas. He gave pure bhakti. He has a whole Sampradaya that gives pure bhakti. The Sampradaya of Vishnu Swami, in which Ballabha Acharya appears, is the Rudra Sampradaya. They give pure bhakti. That's what Lord Shiva really wants. But this other is for people that are the Kali Yuga folks. Provides that option for them. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Raghunandan? No? Okay, go ahead. One question only, please.
My family is, I'm coming from a Mayavada family, so you mentioned Sringeri Math. I appreciate that Sringeri Math philosophy is broken. On the other hand, they also value Bhagavad Gita, and I've seen them do Gita Yajna. So how do we balance the fact that their philosophy is broken? We need to help them out, but they're somewhat sentimentally affiliated with Bhagavad Gita. They like chanting Bhagavad Gita. And how do we look at this?
Well,
they're friends but enemies.
During the breaks, take the microphone from him. We've discussed this multiple times, this very question multiple times, but for the benefit of the persons in the audience. Every one of us, before we took up the path of devotional service, following our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, we were doing something else. It may have been, as in your case, following your father, that line, but it was something else that's, you know, in the category of spiritual, and some affinity for that something that's spiritual. Every one of us. Now, the answer to your question is the same thing that applies to every one of us, not just that group of people. And my conviction is the very best thing that you can do, or any one of us can do, is be examples of ideal conduct. Our achar speaks more than our prachar. Be a person of ideal character. And then when you say something, it may not be what they're used to hearing. They have some faith in something else, or, you know, the million something else's that people have before they come to Krishna consciousness. So when you speak that prachar from the place of achar, it's powerful. And conversely, you may speak the right thing, but if you're conduct is poor, it's not as powerful, it's not as compelling. And there's, you know, so many anecdotal examples of that. Purity is the force. Another way of saying the same thing. So become pure. You want to help others? Become pure. Then you can help others. But if you're not pure, then you can't. Your ego gets in the way. You're a dull instrument in the hand of Krishna. So become pure. Then you're a transparent instrument of all of Krishna's compassion. And then Super Soul will guide you what to say, what to do at the right time, and time, place, and circumstance. Now, sometimes Prabhupada was very strong, sometimes he's very soft, guided by Super Soul because of his purity. So purity and good character, good conduct, good achar. Something else? Oh.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. There's a clarification question. In that Anartha Upashamam verse, the translation says that for helping us go through the phase of Anartha Nivritti, very kindly Srila Vyasadev composed Satvata Sanghitam, which is generally talked about as Vedic literature. But then after one verse later, then he's referring to as Srimad Bhagavatam. So I just wanted to know whether there is a specific indication of Srimad Bhagavatam or in general Vedic literature.
The punchline of your question was less clear than the preamble of your question. Could you say the last part again, slowly and clearly? No, not the whole thing. So there's Tattvata Samhita, and then a verse later it says specifically Srimad Bhagavatam. So your question is?
So when Srila Prabhupada is talking about the compassion of Srila Vyasadev, he is referring to as Srila Vyasadev giving us the entirety of composition of Vedic literature. At least that's how it seems like. But then just one verse later, the reference is made to that this Satvata Sanghita as if it is Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm just clarifying whether that is indicative of the entire Vedic literature or just specifically Srimad Bhagavatam.
That my understanding is it's specifically Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Anything else? You have another question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Someone else? Yes, up front here. We'll take these two questions and then we'll end.
Maharaj, my question is, from Sukadev Goswami's example, is that correct to say when one has no material desires, fully transcendental, then one is automatically attracted by Krishna? And is that that also means if one is less, if one has less material desire, then that person has more Krishna conscious, is more Krishna conscious.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, dry wood burns more readily than wet wood. Bhakti doesn't begin just by negation, by no material desire. Bhakti begins by contact with a bhakta who's carrying bhakti. That's how bhakti begins. But the degree to which we can receive bhakti depends on the receptivity. And attachment to the material makes it difficult to receive bhakti. Therefore, maybe slower if we're attached to the material. In the case of Shukadeva Goswami, he wasn't. He was highly flammable. Dry wood, that just dry grass and chips ready to like... Phew. Gasoline. Phew.
Guru Maharaj, I'm trying to understand the logical sequence of verses, and it seems like from 34 to 43, the main message was Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. and I'm trying to understand the movement towards Abhide and Prayojana.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yes. Yes.
And so is it that he's establishing Achintya, Beda, Beda, Tattva, there's a difference between Jiva and God, and then therefore...
The Jiva and God is Sambandha. It's everything in God. And everything has its relationship of oneness and difference. The energetic has the source of all energies, everything that exists. Prabhupada said there's two things in creation. There's God, and there's gods. And there's not a third thing. Krishna and Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. So that Sambandha is everything, not just the jiva. Maya, the internal potency, external potency, everything. So that's Sambandha. And so specific to the jiva, then that there's a relationship of small and unlimited, and that leads to serving him. So yes, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Exactly. It's detailed to a degree in these verses about Vyas, but the essence is also Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana with Shukadeva. Because that's the Vedic process. Or that's Krishna Tattva. It has all three. Is that right? Okay. Okay. So hopefully we'll see you all tomorrow, at least most of you. Some of you, it's a Friday night special or something. Hare Krishna.